مارك السهابة، The Voice of أهل السنة والجماعة.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Once again, أهلا وسهلا ومرحبا بكم to this edition of the Coffee Express, coming to you live and exclusively from the studios of مارك السهابة online. صوت أهل السنة والجماعة. The Voice of the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah in Durban, South Africa, on this day, the 20th of Rabi'ul Awwal, 1447, corresponding with the 13th of September, 2025. Alhamdulillah, we now into the third session. Our first session was on dedicated to Palestine. Our second session was on DIY with our brother Ibrahim Yusuf Salaji. And we will now be getting on with our third session, which is called Straight Talk. And our guest in this session is Brother Ahmad Tariq. And we will be discussing, inshallah, the kafan and the dafan issues and also our local politics. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Brother Ahmad Tariq.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ahlan wa sahlan to all our radio listeners on a beautiful Saturday morning. Morana, alhamdulillah. Last week's program, we had Prof. I did have a lot of response from all over the province, as well as the country, as well as also internationally. We had a very, very good response. Maulana has done a fantastic job by bringing on Professor Abdul Qadir. We said that every fortnight we will be bringing him again, inshallah. Ji Maulana,
carry on. Any new issues with our kafan and dafan affairs?
Okay, dafan kafan, the Maulana, you must be heard. There was a very tragic thing that what happened on early part of Monday morning, where a husband got up about like 2 a.m, killed his wife, stabbed his children, and hanged himself in Chatsworth. The post mortem was done Monday, and both the husband and wife are actually buried. Now, the question, and Maulana, that's where you want to come in. People do, a lot of people been phoning and asking, Ahmad Bhai, we want to hear on a Saturday morning with you and Maulana, what happens when a person commits suicide? Is it permissible to bury him in a Muslim cemetery and the rest of it? You know, this it's a very hot topic. What happened on early part of Monday. So I said, you know what, I will. Yeah, we must actually, you need to speak to Mufti AK, so maybe one day we'll have a talk on that, because, some of them say in terms of the hadith, you have to bury him on the outskirts of the cemetery because he has committed suicide. I've been in this dafan kafan for a long time. There is books written on when you commit suicide. The books are available at Talimuddin Madrasa, Darul Ehsan, Jamatul Ulama. So there is books regarding if anybody watches. So I did tell our listeners that I will be speaking to Maulana. And Maulana might just give a very brief input regarding the issue about the suicide. Ji Maulana.
Yeah, with that, as far as punishment in this dunya, there is no, you know, penalty in the sense that we cannot bury in Muslim graveyard or we cannot give ghusl and read salatul janaza. There is nothing like that. And as far as burying at the outskirts also, I suppose that is the view of some of the ulama. But they will be given ghusl. You do shroud them. You know, it's not like a person who have become murtad, that where they disqualify for all these things. With suicide, there is absolutely no penalty in this world. You know, that is with Allah Azza wa Jalla in the Akhirah. But they will definitely be buried in a Muslim cemetery. So, there's not very much to discuss on that. But I will definitely read up the thing on burying on the outskirts. I know we had a lot of our politicians that were motivated by, we'll say, communism, because there were Muslim politicians who, eventually became communists, and some of them even mentioned that they are atheists. But when they passed away, I know that, when we're reading about them, they were speaking about Salatul Janaza, they have to be buried before sunset of that day, when you read about them in the newspapers and you say, look at the news. But they still buried them in cemeteries. And what I observed with these people also, they bury them at the outskirts, although it wasn't suicide, but because they say they believed in communism and things like that, they bury them on the outskirts. But what I do is I do a bit more reading on this, and then inshallah we could discuss something in more detail in our session next week.
Inshallah.
Because we don't have that amount of cases, so we don't read about it often, because we like ordinary people also, so we forget over time. So let me do some revision on that. If you have to ask me about anything which is more theoretical than practical, if you ask me something about penal law also, I'll tell you, let me go read about it and then come and talk to you, because we don't, you ask me something about salah, about zakah, and things like that, that we are engaged in all the time, fasting, etc., that we can give answers. But when it comes to things that happen really, we have to do some reading up and revision before giving an answer. Now, you wanted to say something?
No, that is a very, very good answer, Malana, because, people do ask these questions, when it comes, all of a sudden, then we are lambasted with the question, Ahmed, how did you, man has committed suicide, you have now buried him in a Muslim cemetery, you gave janaz, you did a full ghusl, and you read janaz namaz, he says, in our time of Rasulullah, The Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam never performed the janazah salah. The imam of the masjid, if he knows that he has committed suicide, he shouldn't be making the janazah namaz and all that. So these are the things, and you're right in that one, and I just need to, give more input to the community, because these questions do come up when these things happen, Molana.
Yeah, a lot of people, they maintain that incorrect understanding of this. In this dunya, there is no punishment, for them. That is for Allah Azza wa Jalla on Yawmul Qiyamah. If He wishes, He'll forgive also, because Allah Azza wa Jalla is just, circumstances, everything will be taken into consideration. Like, just to, draw a parallel between this and stealing, this I read authentic riwayah of Sayyidina Ali radiallahu ta'ala anhu. In one of his sermons, he said, if a poor man is living among wealthy people and he ends up stealing because out of poverty, for his bread and butter, he is not going to be questioned on Yawmul Qiyamah about why he stole. These are the words of Sayyidina Ali radiallahu ta'ala anhu. It would be the wealthy around him who did not take care of his needs, because Allah Azza wa Jalla has, made zakah obligatory. In the Quran we read, وَفِي أَمْوَالِهِمْ حَقٌّ لِلسَّائِلِ وَالْمَحْرُومِ, and in their wealth is a right for the one who asks and the one who is deprived. So circumstances are taken into consideration. If you look at it in the light of this riwayah of Sayyidina Ali, he said that person who stole won't be questioned if he was living among wealthy people. It would be the wealthy people who would be questioned, because it was their duty to take care of his needs. Right, now getting back to our politics, this water tariffs that's going to go up has become concern for a lot of people. Like the layman is going to ask, how will this affect my specific bill? Now, the article that came out on this from the IOL Independent Online, they use 20 kiloliters hypothetically as an example. The layman will say, I need to know exactly how the surcharge is calculated. Is it a flat fee for everyone, or does it scale with my water usage or property value?
In this incident, it will be a straight tariff that is 40 rand plus the 30 rand. So that, whether you like it or you don't like it, that's going to be built. Now, we must also understand, because they didn't get the tariffs that they actually wanted, when we debated the tariffs increases, they didn't get it. So this is how council normally works. They will find ways in bringing in additional funding to supplement it, and you will see that there's a huge write-off, which you, Malana, you brought to my attention that you want to speak about it as well. So these are the issues that they will start finding ways to bring it. And this 70 rand was not even told to the public or anything like that. It just came as a shocker, because now it's already been passed by the council. And once it's been passed by the council, you can't do much unless you get all the ratepayers association together and bring an application to one voice. Then only you got a chance. That too, by the time you get that high court, you can't bring it on an urgent basis. You go bring it, you issue summons and you go through the process. By the time you get it to court and they start defending and they'll ask for this affidavit, that affidavit, it'll only come 18 months to 2 years down the line. So, by then, the term will be expired. New guys are coming, so they will have to restart it. So there's very little the consumer can do anything, the residents can do anything in terms of this 70 rand, in terms of what we have, the clients, the registered clients on our database, they will bring in like 332 million into our coffers of the city. This is what's going to happen. But the timing is very, very wrong as well, because you have already got tariff increase on your life, water rates, all that increase you have got on sanitation and everything you have got already increased on that. Now you bring additional burden of another 70 rand, which you got no option, but you will have to pay that. Now the question is, why was it not done the proper way? So it should have been normally brought before the community. They should have debated this thing here, whether it's feasible for the community and the ratepayers. So that is the problem. And they just bring it all of a sudden, and they will bring. Council works such a way, they wait to see when the EXCO meeting, and from the EXCO, then it has to come before full council. They will sneak things in like that. So when it comes, your council agenda is too big. So by the time the afternoon comes, they will do it such a way, they'll put it into number sequence and they will bring it. By the time the afternoon you finish, have lunch and all that, by 5 o'clock you have to finish council. And that is when they just put pressure. From 3 o'clock you'll see things, they just say accepted. And they have got majority. You know, even if you get DA and some of the opposition voting against it, they'll still get this resolution passed and the agenda passed on that day of council, because they have got the numbers. The ruling party has got the numbers and they have got the block. Without anyone else, they don't need anybody else to vote. They'll still get everything passed in council. That is the biggest problem we have. Now, we can, as a ratepayer, can make big noise, can write to our ratepayers and bring them to book, but invite the mayor, invite the speaker, and bring it to them. And you need to hold your councillor, ward councillor, because the ward councillor is getting paid, and whoever the ward council is, they need to fight in council for us. But most of them just go there and sit and they don't do anything. Like when I was there, we bring all these, we bring it under Section 18 if it's urgent, under Section 27 if it's, we have to bring a resolution. We say we're not happy with this, we're not happy. We debate this thing, and that's where you have to do it. And most of them, they don't do it. They just sit there, they know end of the month, your 24th, your salary will come, and they sit. They don't even have to bother. So that is it. There's nothing happening on the ground. You can't see that the councillor is taking the with the ratepayers association, fighting for the community and fighting for their ward. They're not doing that on us.
Now, you see, in that article that's on the Independent Online, they speak about further investment of approximately 490 million for sustainable provision of water and sanitation. Now, does the public have a right to know, you know, to demand transparency? You are talking about sustainable provision of water and sanitation. Can they provide a detailed public list of the exact projects this money will fund with timelines and locations? You know, does the public have the right to know that? I mean, that's about transparency.
Molana, everything in council, you have the right because you are a ratepayer. Even if you're not a ratepayer, you are a South African citizen. In terms of the constitution, you have a right to know. You write to that department. You write to water and sanitation. You have got 490 million. Now, this 490 million, this investment they're talking about, if this investment don't come, they have already got a backup for it as well. In terms of national government, they will give them a grant as well. So this money is there. Plus, they have got a backup from the national government to get more money into the coffers of the city. So they is there. But you as a layman has got all the right to write to that department. Now, yeah, you write to water and sanitation. You want A, B, C, D, E, F. And if they don't respond in 7 days, you then take it to the speaker's office and then you take it to the mayor, speaker, and the city manager. They have to do it. That is the rule. There's no way they can't account. They have to account. And then he will tell you, no, I can't give you the full account. We are still in a planning stage, or it's with the city engineers. They will come back to you. You need to keep doing follow-up way it is. If you do a follow-up and a paper trail, you'll get to the root of the problem. This 490 million that is the investment is coming, how is it channeled and where is it being channeled to? That you can get that information, Molana.
Now, most people, you know, members of the public know that the budget for Itikweni is above 70 billion. So they ask the question, why is a surcharge needed instead of using the existing budget? Why can't these critical infrastructure projects be funded from the existing multi-billion rand municipal budget?
Okay, Jimolana. One, the city get 65 billion is our budget for the city. Then you're getting in the region of almost 10 billion from national government for granting aid. So you're looking at 75 billion coming into the city. But what happens if you take your balance sheet, now I'm putting it into a layman's way, how he runs his business. If you showed a loss in 23-24, now whatever they're making, they're filling up the loss. That is the problem. Now the loss is coming from 2022-21, from the flood time, and all that money they wrote off, they didn't do, you know, proper procurement. They didn't finish up housing. So that's it. Now, when you take from, that's why they'll say we're prioritizing from that department X amount into this department. That happens every month in council. They're taking money from here, they're putting it in there. So they're playing
that from Peter and paying Paul.
Paul, that's what is happening. You got it right there, Paul. So that is what is happening at the moment. So we, if you give them another 2-3 billion, it won't suffice, because now you first you're covering up all your previous ones where the work previous 24 work has not been completed. Now you need to complete that work, and then you got the drama of the 25 from January right up to the end of July now, or August just now, September now we are. So you need all that work to be done. So that is the other problem you face with. And then we fortunate so far we didn't have any heavy floods or anything. In between you might have a big flood or something. They have to prioritize that there as well. So these are the problems that we have found ourselves. So every time you're fixing A, you got a problem in B. You're fixing B, you got a problem in C. So this is the problem that the city is in. But if you plan properly, and if you don't waste that money like 1.1 billion, what you want to be talking on just now, you know, writing off millions of rand on millions and billions of rand every year because of doing the wrong thing, coming before the impact, and then we have to write off that money. So if you save all that, we don't have to look for money. And if you plan yourself properly, exactly, you know, my turnover from January for December, last year, 24, I had so much. This year, I say, okay, add another 10% to that, and maybe inflation or anything. Give a realistic number. You know how to budget. You do your buying accordingly. It's the same thing in council too. They not seeing the picture. They don't do a full analysis of everything. And that's where our biggest problem is. Every department is juggling. And then you get some loose hand there. He's starting to pull out, and then the work is not getting done.
Now, you know, there's this we'll say ridiculous debt, uncollected debt, 40 billion, which is more than half the budget of the municipality, which we just mentioned is around 75 billion. Now, 40 billion is definitely more than half. What is being done about the 40 billion in uncollected debt? You know, the DA highlighted this. A huge portion of this is for water. Why are paying citizens being punished instead of the municipality aggressively going after those who don't pay? You know, what is the concrete new plan to collect this debt?
Okay. First and foremost on that debt issue, Maulana, they have put a team of debt collectors. There's about 20 of them have been employed full-time over a three-year contract. Just to, you'll find a lot of our consumers are getting letters from them. They bring their debt. They're going and visiting them after hours as well. They go with the proper, and some of them don't want to open the gate. Then they go and bring a police guy. They go and report this matter, and then they come with the police and say, you know what, this debt has been owed. How do you anticipate to pay that? So from that 40 billion you're talking about, Maulana, you can only recover 20 billion or maybe 18 billion of that. The other one you must make, you're not going to get it finished. There's no way you can get that because some of them are deceased state. Some of them, those people, it is in the areas that the buildings have been hijacked. There's water leakage. There's sewage leakage. There's so much of problem in that 40, and the people are writing to the council and saying, you know what, we can't pay this year because end of the day, we don't have the money. The building has been hijacked, and lots of them I'm handling at the moment are building are being hijacked, and they say, you know what, they're claiming 2 million, 3 million, 5 million, some of them 32 million they're claiming. There's no way you know you're going to get, so that almost 50% of that, you have to write it off completely. And then you only got from there 20 billion you'll be able to bring in from this to the city. There's no other way you can do it. And then we are now giving, you know, to keep the coffers and to keep the things going. Now, most of everybody's asking me as well. You know, we haven't been paying now. We're waiting. There must be something else is coming up. Another concession, they will give us 50%. And you don't blame them. And the people that using that system are mainly the middle class and the upper class people in our city. They're saying, you know, why should I be paying when I know in the next 2 months or so, the city is going to give us 50%. I'd rather don't pay for 2 months. Long as my account is in the areas, in 2 months, if the guy comes to my house, I give him 300 rand, 200 rand, he goes away, and that's it. And then 2 months later, I get my 50%. I'm owing 10,000 rand. I've got 5,000 rand. I wrote off. That's what people are doing. And the poor, who is battling, really, really battling, they can't come up with that 50% to say, okay, let me get borrow some money and all. They can't do it. Even if they borrow, people want interest from them and all that. That is where the problem is. Now, the city is in a catch-22. That's why they're implementing this debt review program to bring in money.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.